Inside Security Podcast with Martin and Steve Yvette and Little Joe. News Yankee Steve giving weekly updates. Armor guy managing the microphones. Joseph's there and sparkles while the vet's in the airport. Andy Googles Microsoft on his iPhone. A family-friendly bucket full of southern goodness. What will they be ranting about this week?
It's episode 194 of the Southern Fried Security Podcast. My name is Martin Fisher. Really glad that you're with us tonight. Joining me here through the miracle of the internet is my good friend Joseph Sicoli, who is deep in his studio, deep underground, recording this for us. Joseph, how are you?
I'm doing well. Baltimore has been beset by many of their April showers, which, of course, as we know, brings pilgrims. You know, Mayflowers, April showers bring pilgrims.
Yeah. You're starting dad jokes early, my friend. Also joining us is our good friend and obligatory news Yankee Steve Reagan. Steve,
what's up?
Tonight we're gonna sort of tackle, I think, sort of a timely topic, but it's also a timeless topic, I think. One of the key things we do as security professionals and in our roles as security leaders is we're called to evaluate security products and the vendors that sell these things. You know, Steve, there's been a couple stories out there recently, you know, about vendors behaving badly. You know, we're recording this here in April of 2017. So you want to kind of give us the quick Chiron hit of the two stories, and we'll have links to these in the show notes.
So the first one's going to be Tanium. It's a next generation vendor that promises visibility into your network in about 15 seconds. And they're catching heat because they were using production data from a hospital during one of their demos. And that raised all kinds of red flags once it was found out. The other incident actually came from Cylance, a company I had written about earlier this year, when they were taking issue with a couple of the industry testing reports that had came out. And the most recent spat with them involved is an allegation that they're using custom or fake malware during their demos and, you know, online tests in order to give themselves a bit of an edge. So they've, of course, denied that. And that's been the situation all along. But there's been a lot of talks about that here lately, and Cylance is no stranger to controversy, I think would be a good way to put that one.
So, Martin, you and I kind of talked about this a little bit while I was in Atlanta this past weekend, and you put together a bit of an outline of the process that, in particular, you use for evaluating these sorts of vendors. So I guess, first and foremost, where do you get information for this, right? There's so many different sources for information on vendors, about those products. How do you go about evaluating it? What sort of information sources do you look for? Do you want to kind of walk us through that?
Yeah, I think, you know, starting at the top, I mean, there's the traditional, you know, where are they on the wave? Which quadrant are they in? There's other analyst firms that do good to not good jobs of reviewing different vendors, different products. And the big thing is you have to remember that people like Gartner, people like Forrester, they have to take a very, very generic view of the product and the vendor, because they're standing in for this notional enterprise, right? It's essentially the John Q. Public enterprise. And if you've ever worked in multiple verticals in security, yeah, there are obviously similarities, but each vertical also has some very specific challenges. You know, Andy's not here tonight, but, you know, he used to work in the financial services world, and the challenges he faced there are different than what he and I face now in healthcare. There's some similarities, but there's also just huge differences. So you always have to remember that there's a perspective that they're coming from. And also, when you look at these analyst reports, one of the big things they do is they talk to customers, right, about their deployments, what they think of the roadmap, and so on and so forth. You know, the thing that Gartner calls completeness of vision, right? How do their customers interpret that? And you have to remember the customer contacts on who to talk to likely came from the vendor. And let's be honest, no vendor is going to go, well, ABC Corporation, they're always sending us hate mail. Let's get Gartner to talk to them. It's just not going to happen. They would be stupid if they did that. And lastly, this may upset a couple of my friends who are in the analyst trade, but we have to, as security folks, we have to acknowledge the perception that there's the potential for pay for play. Gartner, getting yourself into a Gartner quadrant is not a $0 expenditure effort on the part of the vendor. I am not saying that people directly pay, hey, I want to be on the quadrant in this position. How much money is that going to cost me? But there's very clearly part of Gartner's business model is selling services and other things to the vendors that they cover. And I will accept their assertion. There's no hanky-panky, but a reasonable person could, you know, believe otherwise. Kind of related to that is the sort of the third-party testing stuff, you know, the NSS labs. And that's kind of, you know, Steve was talking earlier about where Silence was having an issue with some testing. You've got to understand the tests, much like the analyst stuff, they make a lot of presumptions. So if you look at a test of an endpoint security system or of a firewall or of a whatever, understand what the conditions of the test were. You need to be very, very clear. And usually my experiences in reading these, rarely are the devices being tested, tuned, or optimized as you might find in an environment. Generally, you're getting a very out-of-the-box deployment, and they test against that. And that may or may not be a, quote, fair, unquote, analysis, but that's usually what they do. And again, there's a pay-for-play perception. Vendors have to provide free equipment, free licenses. You know, and there's an expense, there's a non-zero expense they make to have themselves available for the testing. Again, I'm not saying that any money they pay or any resources they expend, you know, guarantee them a position anywhere, but a reasonable person could draw that perception. So at the end of it on third-party testing, I guess what I would say is those testing results, they're not specific, but what they can do is show an outlier. Not referencing any particular NSS results specifically, you know, if they test a bunch of things and, you know, let's say they test seven things and six of them catch 90% of something and one catches zero, you might want to probe into why someone got a zero. Could it be the test? Maybe. Could it be the technology? Maybe. But you owe it to yourself to understand why they are an outlier. I think thirdly, and obviously, there are security podcasts out there, and I just, you know, for no particular reason, they're clearly the best, most relevant, topical, and trustworthy source of information any security professional could ask for.
No question. I'll back that one up.
Unless you're listening to Defensive Security, and you can just ignore everything they say. Andy, I mean, the last one, and the one for me that's really worked well for me, and I think it just goes to building your personal is your personal network, and that reliable network of peers that you've built, where you can reach out and ask folks. There are dozens of folks that may have deployed the solution I'm looking at, or they know people who have, and I can reach out to them via a Twitter direct message, or if they're local, hey, let me meet you and buy you a beer. And we can have a non-attributable, you know, sidebar conversation, which is going to be, you know, very, very real. And I also provide those, right? People reach out to me and say, have you deployed X, or have you looked at this vendor? And if it's someone, you know, I have some confidence and trust in, I'll have a very candid conversation with them. And that's a real way to sort of either validate or not validate the other information you've gathered from all your different sources. Now, the one thing about networking, and it's less at the more senior levels of information security, but definitely if you start talking to engineers or analysts about particular products, perspectives, everything. Some people just don't like company Z. They're going to hate all of their products, no matter what. I mean, for people who know me, there are two companies that on advice of counsel I won't mention on the podcast, who I don't care what they make. I'm going to have a very dim view of it simply because of the way those companies are operated in my previous experiences with them. And I know that bias about myself, and I tell people that when I talk to them about it. But just understand, people do come in with their biases. So, yeah, that's to me, that's where the third-party information starts.
So I'm going to make sure that we go ahead and we put this particular outline in the show notes for people to go ahead and take a look at. But my question is, and for those who want to know kind of how the sausage is made, Martin did put this outline together. Did you put these in order based on significance or on which you go to first? For example, having a networking discussion of, hey, I did work with these guys and they were great or they weren't so great or whatever, that's really hard to present to upper management as, yeah, Joe Bob, who I've known for 27 years or whatever, he and I had this discussion about this company and I really think we should go with them.
They're actually presented in the order I usually do them.
Okay.
Start with the analysts, right? And then that will help drive you. That may disqualify someone. Like in some organizations, if someone's not in the top right quadrant, you can't even begin to have a conversation through supply chain of getting them. Now, you can argue whether or not that's a stupid idea or not. I tend to think it is. But in some organizations, that's just the way it is. And then what you can do is you take what you learned in the analyst and you start looking at some whatever testing is available. Obviously, always go to your podcasts. And then when you sort of at that point, then you hopefully you've got you've kind of rank rated in your head 1, 2, 3 of the solutions. And at that point, then you can kind of reach out. You've got a little, you know, you have enough information to ask good questions. Then you can start asking people. And then through the end of that, that should help get you to the point where you're ready to take those next steps on the road of acquisition.
Okay. So that makes sense. So once you've gone through this sort of information gathering perspective, you've probably narrowed it down to usually 1, 2, maybe 3 vendors. What does your product evaluation process look like?
Yeah, to me, it starts with third-party data and demos. And the big thing is you need to make sure that, because remember, the analyst firms and the third-party testing don't reflect your requirements. So what you need to do is ask some very specific questions, and please tell me you've got your requirements documented, right? Specifically what you want this product to be able to do. And you can sit down with the demos and ask the question, right, and have them show you in the demo. And what you're going to discover is many times if you've really thought through your requirements, some vendors will claim to do it better or not, or they won't be able to do it, or that's in our next release and what have you. And you can weigh for yourself whether or not their inability to provide something or either completely or not to the level you need is disqualifying or not, but it's a data point. And if it gets to the point where, yes, our requirements are met, at that point, then you do a proof of concept. Now, some people consider a proof of concept to be sort of an extended demo, and I think that's really wasting a lot of people's time. Doing a POC costs money. It costs time. It costs resources. That equals money. So when you do a POC, you want to make sure you're devoting the right number of resources to it, and you really provide the structure. The most important thing is never, 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 never allow the vendor to define what success is in a proof of concept. Because I'm willing to guarantee that short of the shiny box bursting into flame and burning your entire data center down, they're going to call that proof of concept a success. And even then, they might simply say, no, it was your UPS that failed and our appliance did exactly what it was supposed to do.
I'd also argue that you never let a vendor define what your criteria is. This is going back to your own requirements.
Absolutely.
When you're talking to some vendors, and I've sat in on a number of conversations like this, demos and just straight requirement discussions. And full disclosure, I did this both as my full-time job before journalism and during my career in journalism. And you would be shocked at the number of times a vendor has actually categorically told a potential customer that the requirements they have outlined really don't align to industry best practices, my favorite sort of phrase, or they don't align to realistic needs or scenarios or outcomes. And when your potential vendor is giving you that kind of pushback, that should be your first red flag that what they have to offer is not what you need.
Right. I mean, there have been times when I've encountered that, and my response is to thank them for their time, get up and walk out of the room. I don't allow the vendor to drive the definition of success, nor am I going to allow them to tell me which use cases I can or can't test. Use cases are driven by requirements, and you documented your requirements, and you do have documented use cases, so you can actually determine whether or not the system you're testing can do what you need it to do. And if you don't do that, you're wasting everybody's time. And if you don't document what you're looking for, the vendor is going to steer you to pay attention to the shiny blinky stuff that they know they do really well. Because again, they want to define your problem as the thing they do. But if you've defined your problem and you hold them to that definition, you can actually get a realistic assessment as to whether or not they can do what you need.
So now one question I have is that I've often, at least recently, found vendors asking me straight up, what are your success criteria for this particular proof of concept or something along those lines? Are you fully upfront with that? Or, you know, do you say I have my own internal stuff or?
Absolutely. I'm going to be as transparent as I can. Mostly because, remember, this is during this POC, during this pre-sales time, this is going to be the best support environment and the best interaction environment you're ever going to have with this vendor. So with me being extremely candid, extremely transparent, and me being very clear with them that what my expectations are, if they start ghosting me, right? Okay, I'm out. I'm going to walk away. Because your service and support levels are only going to go down once they cash your check. There is nowhere to go but down. Pre-sales organizations are generally staffed with some of the most senior people. Their staffing levels are much higher than support because those pre-sales engineers are highly financially motivated to sell you. Day one, day two of after go live and the check's been cashed, those incentives don't exist anymore for your help desk, for the help desk and support people. They want to get you off the phone as quickly as possible. And they'll leave it to this to the inside sales folks to butter you up when it comes time for renewal. So maybe that's overly cynical, but 20 years of experience tell me that is the way of the world. And maybe if you work for a vendor, you work for a unicorn that doesn't do it that way. And if so, hey, shoot me an email, shoot me a tweet, let me know. I'd love to hear about it. But that's been my experience, is that this is, you know, during POC is as good as it's ever going to get. And you, with all that data that you got over there from the proof of concept, were they successful? Did you get all, you know, the appropriate use cases taken care of? Are you happy with the level of support you got? Combine that with all the other information you have. I think at that point then, especially when you're talking a system that may be hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars, you can feel comfortable going to senior leadership and asking for that investment to bring this on board because you know that implemented correctly, it's going to be able to do what you want.
There's another side too during the POC. You actually have this noted here about trying to break it.
Oh, gosh, I didn't talk about that, did I?
Well, yeah. Well, one of the things I saw in a demo with trying to break it was basically a requirement that this particular IT manager knew there was absolutely no way the product would be able to perform. There was no way this product was going to do it. But he put it in there just to see how they would handle that situation and what solutions they could come up with on the fly. And I was really curious about that. I was like, why would you set them up to fail? And he goes, I'm not setting them up to fail. I want to see how they react under pressure. I want to know that if something happens they can't predict and I get attacked somewhere or something horrible happens on my network, I want to know when I call support, what's going to happen to me? What am I going to have to deal with?
Right.
And that made sense to me. The funny thing was when that situation came up, and just as expected, the solution itself fell to pieces. In about 25 minutes, a sales engineer who happened to be on site had cobbled together an answer, and then the support people coded up a hotfix right then and there that solved the problem. because they realized this was a hole in their worldview. And that was impressive. That really was. So when you say, you know, really try to break it, don't be afraid to put things out there just to see the response. You never know what you're going to get.
The other thing I want to make sure we cover on this is when it comes to breaking stuff, I have actually been in proof of concepts, or there's been proof of concepts proposed to me where as part of the POC, you agree to not pen test the product. That's another situation where you just walk away.
Danger. Danger, Will Roberts. Danger.
Now, recently, I've got to be very careful how I say this. We were testing a product and kind of like what you're talking about, Steve, we found a bug. And the vendor actually, one, I think they were kind of shocked that we found this. And we had documented it well enough to go, yeah, this is a bug, dude. You're not behaving as expected. And I was pleasantly surprised that they turned it into a bug report. And they were like, thank you for finding this. This is really embarrassing, but we're going to get to work on fixing this. And relatively short order, there was a fix put out. And they were really freaked out that we were going to think awful things. And I'm like, no, this is – bugs happen. How you respond to them is the important thing. And yay you. Again, getting back to this is as good as it's ever going to get. So they set a higher bar than I would normally expect. And, you know, I was impressed. So, again, try to break the stuff. And if they won't let you try to break it, consider walking away.
Sticking with the break it thing, if they deny you the chance to pen test, what argument would you make to allow that to happen? So you say, you know, this is hooked up in my environment, I want to test it. And they say, no, you can't pen test this. What do you say to that? What's your initial reaction? How do you overcome that barrier?
I would challenge them and ask, you know, can you explain to me why? And they'll probably throw some. I've actually heard someone claim that the Digital Millennium Copyright Act prohibits it. Yeah, whatever. But at that point, then there's, to me, it's immediate, right? Assessment complete in my notebook, close it, stand up, thank them for their time and walk out. There's really no coming back from that in my mind, because we're talking about security products here. If you aren't capable of handling a penetration test, you're not tall enough to ride the ride. And, you know, we'll take you back to the kiddie bumper cars and it's a small world. Meanwhile, I'm going to go try to find someone who can, you know, do the roller coaster with the loop, the loop. Kind of makes some metaphors there, I think. But in any case.
So now one thing that I do want to make sure that we address here is that there are always, right, with basically anything we talk about, there are edge cases here where this doesn't line up.
Right. There's an entire industry, right, the service provider industry. You know, pen testers, MSSPs, implementation services, all kinds of things where it's not a product they're selling, but it's the people. And these rules generally don't apply. And I'm thinking, Joseph, we probably want to do another episode that talks about evaluating service providers, because I just don't think there's enough time for me to wax philosophic for another 30 minutes.
No, and I would probably say, as a bit of foreshadowing, it's even less straightforward than this particular discussion. So, I think we should definitely save this one for a future episode.
So, I think we're done.
I think so.
So, if you work in the vendor space, or if you're in sales or whatever, and you have been raging at your podcast device, feel free to reach out to us. The podcast Twitter handle is @SFSPodcast. I am @ArmorGuy. I welcome your feedback. I would love... If you think that I'm wrong, or you think that I've been mean, let me know. It's possible I'm wrong. And if I'm mean, well, you can tell my mother about it. Any last words of wisdom, guys?
If you've got a story that you want to tell about an evaluation or how you go about evaluating products, we want to hear from you. Some cravats. We can't use the vendor name, so we don't need to know what that is, but we need to know like some basics. Like, you know, I was doing a demo with a vendor. Here's what happened. We'd be very interested in hearing if your process differs from what Martin outlined, because it's a lesson everybody could take home with.
So with that, guys, I think this was a great conversation. So on behalf of Joseph Sicoli and Steve Reagan and the absent Andy Willingham and the out learning all about AWS stuff tonight, Yvette Johnson, I've been Martin Fisher. Thanks for joining us, and we will talk to you again soon. Good night.
Good night.
Night, everybody.